Today's episode is brought to you by Kevel, the API-first SaaS solution proudly ushering in the retail media renaissance with their groundbreaking Retail Media Cloud. If you're sick of sharing your revenue or unimpressed by current black box solutions, there is another way, and we're not talking about building from scratch or going it alone. Kevel can help you optimize your on-site sponsored listings and boost your ROI. Help your retail media platform stand out with captivating user experiences. And best of all, you maintain full control of your data with our zero-touch data processing. The flexibility of Kevel's Retail Media Cloud is the solution built for you. To learn more, go to kevel.com/listen. That's kevel.com/listen. Welcome to Marketecture, where you can get smart fast with in-depth interviews of leading technology executives. I'm Ari Paparo, and I'm joined today by Parag Vora, the Chief Revenue Officer of Equativ. Parag, thank you for being here.
Absolutely a pleasure.
Equativ? How do you say it?
Equativ.
Okay. Yeah. And this is the company that probably many people in our audience know as Smart Ad Server.
Exactly.
Right. But you changed the name to Equativ a couple of years ago.
Very transparently. I've only been with the company a few months, and when initially I was told about Equativ, I did not know who they were talking about until they mentioned it.
It has happened to me.
Yeah.
So Equativ has a pretty broad product line. We're going to kind of go through the highlights, but probably focus a little more on the newer things. But just to get us started, can you give us the basics about, like, where is it headquartered, roughly the employee size? It's still a private company, but just give us a sense of the size of the company.
Absolutely. So basically, it's a shade over 500 people. It is actually fairly global in a true sense of the word. Headquartered in Paris. And till I actually joined the company in January, for the large part, the C-suite was entirely in Paris, except for a chief strategy officer who was also appointed to that post in January. He's in London. And then I came in as chief revenue officer very deliberately in New York. And the point is for us to actually truly become global, not just tactically, which I think we already are, but even at the senior levels of decision-making and so on and so forth.
And roughly, you know, what about your business? Is it mostly Europe with some US, or is there even spread?
So I would say yes. I mean, if you actually look at the numbers, the US and Europe are actually not that far apart. Mm-hmm. It's just that I would say that the mix of business is different. Europe is where the company's home was, where the ad serving business was founded. And so what you have is a much more diverse business in Europe around the supply side, as well as, you know, programmatic platform and so on and so forth. In the US, substantially, I think, again, the US is a much bigger market. So even when I say the US and Europe are about the same, to me, it means that, hey, you know, there's much more opportunity in the US relative to Europe. But where we are is, I think we've done a pretty decent job penetrating on the demand side, some of it through acquisition of Dynatmic on the DSP side, others through on the supply footprint as well. But again, quite a ways to go in the US.
Okay. Well, let's go around the horn. So I think this will be the bulk of our conversation. We'll talk about each of the products on its own and then how they fit together. So you're known for a publisher-side ad server, the Smart Ad Server. Tell us about the status of that business, how it competes with Google or Xandr or other offerings out there, and how it's differentiated.
So very transparently, I think that business is the legacy business. And mm-hmm. I think we generally know that from a pure size standpoint, Google pretty much owns that sphere. I think where we are really differentiating ourselves is our ability to actually offer enterprise level service. So there's certain areas where we will engage with. So there's a legacy aspect of it. And then what we're looking to really pivot to is becoming a provider of enterprise ad server capabilities to companies that don't want a one size fits all. Right. So that's on the ad server side. And then, of course, we pivoted, I mean, now some time back to the SSP side of the business. And again, when you look to Europe and actually Europe, Latin America, Mexico, Brazil, and so on and so forth, we are actually in the top three SSPs. In the US, however, yes, we're relatively new, not from a product standpoint, but from a penetration standpoint. So we've been around and we've, you know, slowly built up. But again, that's where the focus is. And then I think the next iteration after that is curation, which is substantially a focus globally for us.
Right. I want to talk about curation, but let's just spend a little bit more time on the first two products. So on the ad server side, you said enterprise customers want something different. Can you give me some use cases or some brands if you're allowed to disclose?
I don't want to speak to specifics at the moment because it's a relatively recent pivot. I will say this. In speaking to certain companies, be it in the gaming space or the CTV space, what we realize is that there is sort of, yes, the standard market for off-the-shelf ad server. And then there are companies that are looking for more of a customized solution. And I don't know, we didn't really talk about my own background, but I used to work for IPON Web. And therefore, I'm very used to the idea of actually working with enterprise clients in terms of customized offerings. So that's sort of where we are pivoting to. So you asked me the question, where we stand with regard to legacy business. I would say the legacy business is sort of, it's there. I don't think it's no secret. It's not growing substantially.
Sure.
Where we do see it growing is more in the enterprise space.
Got it. Yeah, there's a couple of offerings out there for publisher customized ad servers. There's Kevil and you folks, and then IPN Web is still in the business to some extent. It's an interesting market. So on the SSP side, first question I'd have is, what's the overlap between like ad server and SSP customers? Is there high overlap? Do you have to be an ad server customer to use the SSP, or is it
not just
standard?
Right. So we would like pretty much everyone who's in the ad server space to be in the SSP, but actually it depends on how you define the word overlap, because our SSP integrations are far more broad today than our ad server product offering and option. So I would say that, yes, if you look at our ad server clients substantially, then yes, they are part of the SSP. But many more of our SSP publishers are far more widespread relative to the ad server aspect.
Right. And so what differentiates your SSP? I mean, largely people consider SSPs to be somewhat of a commodity space. So how are you different from other ones?
Now I'm going to speak to SSP specifically, and
sure.
I think where you have to look at sort of how a lot of the ad tech infrastructure has been around, right? I say this as somebody who's seen the evolution. A lot of it is we end up basically making SSPs for the US market, and then we try and localize for Europe. So I would say, first of all, this is like what we actually offer is an SSP that was built for the European market with very distinct sort of understanding of publisher capabilities that go to the major markets from the ground up across Italy, Spain, France, Germany, et cetera. And I think it's actually relatively easier to expand in the US, which is, you know, you relatively speaking, monolingual and one big market, right? So purely the efficiency of traffic shaping and engagement with publishers across a wide spectrum of languages and legalistic processes, things like that, I think we've done a really good job executing there. Where I think we need to expand is purely from a volume standpoint in the US. And I think it is our European heritage that's been really helpful in helping us penetrate even in Brazil and Mexico and so on and so forth. The US is a little bit different market, which I think, you know, we are aware of.
Are there big differences in Europe besides language?
I mean, I would say the regulatory environment is much tougher from a privacy first standpoint. I would say what we bring to the US market is actually ahead of where your typical homegrown US ad tech infrastructure is. That sensitivity and awareness, data controls, things like that.
Sure, got it. And in terms of, you know, sort of formats and coverage, I know a lot of your marketing materials talks about CTV. Do you want to talk to me about how the SSP spans formats?
Let's maybe narrow down that question. Are you talking about specific formats here?
Well, yeah, I guess like what's the breakdown of like video versus non-video and what's your positioning in CTV?
Okay, so I will say, interestingly, that there are certain markets where we're actually really ahead in CTV. I will say Germany and Mexico are too. We tend to have a US-centric worldview here, but definitely I think where we are making a penetration is where I would say televised sports is a big deal, therefore there's a lot of supply. So that's where, you know, these two markets are actually have, because of soccer or football, they have that in common. So we've done a lot of penetration. Looking to Europe, I would say that CTV and OLV combined is a shade under half of our total volume. And then display makes up the rest. We actually have an audio offering as well, but that's rather at its infancy at the moment.
And with CTV and SSP, often it's kind of complicated because of the ways the ads are delivered. Is that an area where there's a tighter integration with your ad server for like pods and competitive exclusions and things like that?
That's a wonderful question. That's something we're actually working on, and it's something that we will actually speak to over the next couple of months, actually.
Okay. So you mentioned curation. Let's dive into that. So that's a pretty hot topic. What's your position on curation?
So I actually want to speak to my personal background because I think it relates strongly to curation. So I used to work for a company called Sojourn, which is in the travel space. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. If you are, in essence, the model was the sort of a traditional model. And I read actually your article about curation, which speaks to that traditional model of combining media and data. So interestingly, at Sojourn, that's exactly what we did. We would lease data from the various travel providers, but then we would have to do it within the environs of our DB360 instance, right? And therefore, what that led to was managed service, which worked great as long as managed service was the standard way of buying programmatic IOs. Having said that, once the agencies started trading on their own and they wanted their hands on keyboard, Sojourn, along with others in the same space, faced this dilemma, what do we do next? So I know there was some innovation around, you know, us trying to pipe in again from the DSP side. What our travel clients, our partners didn't want to do is make their data ubiquitous and available to the DSP. So that really narrowed down its options. And that is when, even while I was at Sojourn, I actually ended up speaking to IPON Web, along with our head of product, about supply side curation. That seemed to be the answer to our questions. Interestingly enough, I ended up working for IPON Web just a few scant months later in 2020. And this is where we really went deep into curation. And I think our take was supply side curation. There's a secular movement, if you will, closer to the publisher, and supply side curation gets you there. With that, 3 years, actually 4 years of working on curation at IPON, when I came here, what I've been really pleasantly surprised to see is from a UI standpoint, from a capability standpoint, how far ahead Equative is relative to the competition.
Okay, so what is that's a long introduction, but what does Equative do in curation?
Well, fundamentally, it allows for the integration of media and audiences. Everyone's aware of that. Well, I think what Curator does better is, I think, the capability of, say, daisy chaining or meta deals, where you can actually create a macro deal and then sub deals, do A-B testing within a single deal ID. These are sort of the innovations that are, I believe, unique to us at the moment.
Interesting. And so what is the business model of your curation platform? Who pays for the data and do you take a cut of it?
Yes. So ultimately, I think our curation partners set their own pricing for whatever they wish. And ultimately, that's the beauty of a bidded environment is the deal and the programmatic workflow needs to make sense, what you bid and so on and so forth. So we do take a rev share, which varies based on volumes and so on and so forth. We take a rev share based on whatever that markup is. I mean, there's flexibility on that. So it's not a one-size-fits-all approach, but we will take a fee for the process of curation because we see there's a hard cost to that.
Right. So I just want to walk through it because it is a bit confusing. So you have a publisher on your SSP. Mm-hmm. You have a data provider. It's a third party. And the data provider needs, I assume, needs permission from the publisher to curate their audience.
Yes. So basically, publishers will give permission. By and large, what we've seen is publishers view this as simply extra demand.
Right, of course.
Okay. They're still winning. I mean, ultimately, the bid that they get is the winning bid in the auction. So to them, the fact that there's a data overlay making the potential value of their media more attractive, that's a good thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. So the publisher sets their CPM floor, let's say $1, right. And then the data provider says my day is worth 50 cents, and then the deal goes out at $1.50, and then they win the bid, and then the data provider gets 50 cents less your fee, and the publisher gets $1 less your fee.
Yes, that's pretty much it.
Okay, great. That's pretty straightforward. One detailed question on curation. I think when I spoke to Index Exchange, they indicated that they allow their curating partners to append data in real time, like based on a call out. I thought that was kind of interesting. Do you have that capability?
Yes, actually. And I think they were speaking of one particular data provider.
Okay.
To the best of my knowledge, that actually wants that. That's guesswork on my part. But yes, we've had a couple of data providers asking for that, and we're actually actively working on that right now. But yes, the capability does exist technically.
Okay. And from a buyer's perspective, this is just a deal ID. The buyer doesn't need to do anything special.
Well, so that's a really good question. I go back to actually the article you wrote where you referred to it as the anti-SPO. And for me, it's SPO and let's call it the anti-SPO are two parallel use cases. Okay. So if you're basically looking at the DSP as the point of engagement, and then you're saying, okay, bring me everything that's out there, but in a very linear manner. I want no interference between my buying and the publisher, great, that's supply path optimization. To me, deal IDs have multiple use cases in themselves. And fundamentally, it's about saying, I actually don't want the noise. I have a very precise buying use case. I want to execute on that. Where I think traders need to be a little bit trained on is because these use cases are so fundamentally different, they need to understand that in one case, it's a DSP-centric buy. In the other case, it is actually not a DSP-centric buy where you're really doing no other overlays and it's a very straightforward transaction that you're bidding and buying.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. I like the way you put it. It's both SPO and anti-SPO at the same time. So you bought a DSP. What was the name of the DSP you bought?
Depends on. So we bought a couple.
Okay.
Dynamic is, I think, the one you're talking about.
What was it called again?
Dynamic. D-Y-N.
Dynamic. So what's your current buy-side solution? I know on your website you talk about cookie-less solutions, but in general, what is the solution? Who's using it?
So we do offer Dynamic as a managed service solution today. Okay. That is what we have out there. And in essence, it is a significant portion of our buy-side capabilities today. Having said that, what we are working on is introducing buy-side capability into the curation platform itself.
Okay.
And the idea being not that, hey, this is supposed to compete with the DSPs out there, but specific to curation. This is where we go back to the SPO versus anti-SPO. Specific to the curation model, if you are interested in curation, then what we would rather have is the entire end-to-end solution live within the platform if a client so chooses. Again, the idea is agencies sometimes have to use third-party DSPs. They're welcome to do that. But if the idea is that, well, for this use case, to me, I don't really need a third-party DSP. I'm not using all of their capabilities. We want to introduce, and to that extent, we are taking our existing DSP, you know, capabilities and incorporating that from a capability standpoint into what we want to offer.
Right. So in the future, this isn't currently available. A buyer right. could log into your curation platform, have some curated deals, and effectively like upload an ad tag and some other data and get reporting.
Exactly.
Right. And do you plan on continuing offering the managed service DSP in the marketplace?
100%. Absolutely. Yeah. So the way that we view this is there is a market segment that wants their own hands-on keyboard. And that what they're looking for is platform capabilities. But then there's another customer segment out there that's looking for outcomes. They're not really interested in sponsoring their own capabilities for hands-on keyboard and so on and so forth. And therefore, they want managed service. So for us, it makes sense to actually be in both places.
Right. Now, on your website, you talk a lot about cookieless, and it specifically calls it cookieless buyer solutions. So what are you getting at there? What is your post-cookie solution, and is it specific for buyers or everyone?
So it's not like we are coming out and saying we have a proprietary cookieless solution. Our role as a curation platform is to essentially partner with as many alternatives as possible. And I think that ubiquity is what we're looking to offer. So there are entities out there saying they will not support alternative IDs and so on and so forth, right? So from that standpoint, I think it is responsible for us as an ad tech company to say, okay, if we are on the supply side, we want to make sure that we support as many alternatives as we can, thereby enhancing the scale that you can draw, whether it is through lazy chaining or whether it is through independent sort of in amalgamation of various alternative IDs. So we're not looking to come up with a proprietary solution. It is to partner with as many credible alternatives as possible.
So you're going to support probabilistic and deterministic and sandbox?
Correct.
Okay.
I actually want to be very affirmative about that. Yes, we are looking to support all three. Yes.
Have you made any progress on sandbox as of this recording?
Yeah, so we are actively engaged with Google. There's been, you know, back and forth around what the actual offering itself, because even from Google side, there have been some changes and fine tuning, et cetera. One issue that we have is we don't want to go down a lot of work and then have things change on us again. So obviously we're being a little bit deliberate in terms of how much resources we allocate and what the timeline is, but we're definitely working on it. Yes.
Okay. So we've covered really all the products I wanted to cover. Is there anything I missed?
No, just I think we go back to curation. I think what I would love to just sort of speak more broadly about is we in the ad tech industry tend to speak of curation from the point of view of third-party data providers. You know, they're big curators out there that are using ubiquitous data. coming from my background at Sojourn, I really feel that this is a game changer in terms of incorporating revenue streams. So, you know, retail media, that's a hot topic nowadays, and that's about on-site monetization. But there's a natural, and my 1 year at Criteo in the Hypon Web acquisition, it was very interesting for me to learn about the on-site versus the off-site. And there are natural limitations on scale. I think where curation really comes into play, and I think that knowledge hasn't really sunk in into marketeers, is how much they can actually monetize their audiences, especially if they're intent-based or proprietary audiences. I think that is still a challenge that we as ad tech platforms have to communicate out there in sort of the non-ad tech space to marketeers in general, CMOs in general.
Yeah, it's a very interesting subject and it's a very dynamic. It's moving around a lot. So let's go to our quick lightning round. So relatively quick questions. You give me relatively quick answers. First, what's your biggest market challenge?
The United States marketplace.
What about it?
There's a tendency to inertia and sort of self-selecting a few big players. And I think that's partially understandable and natural, right? But I really believe that sometimes opportunities around better mousetraps are missed because of that.
Right.
And I say this not just from my present company, but having worked with other companies that were pretty good technically, very innovative, but I think that inertia is a hard problem to solve.
Yeah, I could turn that around and say you should give a shot trying to sell American tech into France and see how inertia is, but I get your
Actually,
point.
Actually, no, I can prove it. That American tech sells very well in France. Look at Google's penetration.
All right. What's the main thing that keeps people from using some of your solutions?
I think for us, really, at the moment in the U.S., it's an awareness play. I mean, you know, we talk about the word Equative not being as well known. So to me, it's not that it keeps people from using us. It's related to my first answer. So you have inertia, and then you have a brand that's relatively less well known. That's all.
Right. Well, hopefully people will watch this podcast. So. What's your number one competitive advantage?
I can very categorically say in this case that curation and the UI that we offer is absolutely best in class.
Okay. And I ask this question of everyone, so don't be insulted, but what prevents the giants like Google and Amazon from crushing you?
Well, hopefully the regulatory environment, for one.
All right.
I would say that the second, I mean, I'm not walking away from that first aspect of the answer, but the second one truly is also service. The way we will work towards and innovate towards a solution is different from any of the giants that you mentioned. And that's just a fact.
Last question. If Equative was an animal, what animal would it be?
Aha. Uh-huh. In my own opinion, I would say a cheetah.
Okay, why?
Look at how, like, you go from ad server to SSP to curation. We have Gallop pretty quickly. Gallop is the right word for a cheetah. Sorry, my wildlife knowledge is not that up to speed.
Cheetahs gallop, so I guess. I think cheetahs kind of gallop.
But definitely, I would say that we really kept innovating very rapidly. And we've had, we followed the scent of where ad tech is going in a macro level and really innovated and pivoted very swiftly, very nimbly in that direction.
All right. Parag Vora, thank you so much for being here.
It was absolutely a pleasure.
Thanks for listening. New interviews are added every week at marketecture.tv and your favorite podcasting app.